Hey guys, what's happening? Welcome to another episode of I Talk Movies. My name is Ben Bateman. I'm joined today by an excellent guest, Mr. John Scheck. You know him as Jonah Hex in Legends of Tomorrow. He's got a brand new film coming out this Friday called Arsenal. Hang out with us. We're going to talk the whole thing down. We'll see you in a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's I Talk Movies.
What's happening, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome to I Talk Movies on the Popcorn Talk. I'm your host, Ben Bateman, joined today by Mr. John Scheck. Yay. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good.
This is cool. This is cool. I'm glad to have you here. We connected because of Action Movie Anatomy. Somebody tweeted about your movie, Marauders.
And I wasn't on the credits.
Yeah.
I finally got on the credits, by the way. I think one of the stars of the movie. And they put me as an extra.
That's crazy.
On IMDb, so.
That's wild, yeah. So, and then we were like, we'll do Marauder, sure. And then, like, you just followed us, and you were like, yeah, I'll do it when I'm in town. We're like, oh, cool. This is how Twitter works. This is great.
It's great.
Yeah, it's so cool. So, but that's, you know, that's Marauders, and you've got another movie from the same director that comes out, we're actually recording this. Yesterday, we traveled back in time, and you guys are going to see this on Friday when the movie actually comes out. It releases tomorrow.
Today.
Yeah, that's cool.
It is in 10 theaters.
Sweet. Okay.
And then it's on demand, or as I like to say, it's a pay-per-view event.
That's like everything now. We talk a lot on the Action Movie Show that I mentioned, Action Movie Anatomy, that there was a time when you would see a trailer for a movie. And if, let's just say, it had like Bruce Willis or something, he'd be like, oh yeah, that's going to be in theaters, and then I'll see it in the video store, and I know how it works. And then you'd see other movies where you wouldn't recognize the people as much, and you'd be like, oh, maybe that'll be straight to video. But there was a real separation. Nowadays, I'll see a trailer with a huge movie star that I know, and I'll have no idea if it's going to be in theaters anywhere, if it'll be Redbox, it'll be just only Netflix. You just have no idea, and it almost doesn't matter in some ways. People will talk about it if they want to talk about it, and they won't if they won't. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a preconception about what it's going to be.
Right.
If it's going straight to DVD, they still say VHS.
Yeah.
But, you know, these films are actually made for Lionsgate's version of Netflix.
Right.
Because everyone's trying to get content to have this.
Yeah, right.
You know, for the shows. Like, Netflix is basically doing their own content. Putting their own movies out. They're buying movies from the studios.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
I interviewed last year, like, Spike Lee for that movie Chirac that he did.
Right.
And it was an Amazon Studios movie. It's only been a year, maybe not even a year since that interview. And already I feel like the amount of surprise I had for the fact that it's like, oh, wow, a Spike Lee movie and it's Amazon Studios? That's so innovative. It's already like, that's old news. Everybody's doing that.
Right, everyone's doing that. Yeah.
It's been like less than a year, so. Anyway, guys, if you happen to recognize John here, it's because he's Jonah Hex on Legends of Tomorrow, which is huge and everywhere. And I told my girlfriend, Roxy Stryer, who's like a gigantic DC fan. She does Flash and Friends at Screen Junkies. She was on all the panels here, I mean, Flash, everything. I was like, yeah, John Scheck. She was like, isn't that Jonah Hex? I was like, yeah. She's like, that's amazing. How are you interviewing Jonah Hex? It's like, well, I mean, he was like in these action movies. We kind of connected. I haven't watched Legends. I've seen your episodes, of course. But so yeah, you're like a fucking superhero.
I got called Jonah today in the gym.
Really?
Yeah, someone called me Jonah. I didn't know quite whether to say, hey man, I'm Jonathan.
Yeah.
Or just call me Jonah. Who cares?
Right. That's great. Pretty cool. It's such a big movement right now, all the superhero TV. There's a lot of it. It's really surpassed where I thought it was going to be when they first announced. I guess the first one was Arrow. I guess way like 5 years ago or something.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, CW is trying out the whole superhero thing. We'll see if this works out. And like, flash forward, and it's like the biggest stuff on, you know, that's not obviously your HBOs and whatnot. I mean, these shows are gigantic. I feel like everybody watches them.
Yeah, they go cross from one to the other. And it's
smart.
It's smart, right?
And really
that
smart.
That way, all four shows get picked up.
Right.
Just not one.
So were you a fan of Jonah Hex and comic books?
I was.
You got cast. Oh, cool.
Yeah, my father read Sergeant Rock and Jonah Hex when I was growing up.
Okay.
Those are two I remember, you know, with Superman and Spider-Man. And,
right.
But those two kind of stuck out because they were kind of like, visually, they were a little more authentic.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad was always kind of hesitant whether he should give those to me or not because there's violence.
Right, totally.
But, you know, he was a Baltimore City cop, so he was like, hey, man, this is real.
Yeah. So, yeah, so you probably, I mean, you're talking those days, he probably gave you the comic around not that long after John Hex was even really created. I mean, his first appearance, I think, was All-Star Western number 10. So that's like 72, 73, 74, something like that.
Yeah, so.
Right?
Yeah, so.
Sergeant Rock was a big 70s comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's cool. I worked in comic book stores growing up. That was my thing. I have 6,000 comics in my mom's basement.
Do you have any John Hex?
Maybe a little.
Sergeant Rock?
Definitely have Sergeant Rock.
Yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
Why haven't they made that movie?
Well, it was actually, so they've tried a few times. Schwarzenegger was attached.
I remember that.
In the early 90s. It was like 90, Joel Silver was going to produce, and it was like 92 or something like that. But they made Last Action Hero instead. Fail.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, it was a bummer. But then he followed that up with True Lies, which is one of
which
the...
Which was great.
It's one of the greats, right?
Yeah.
You know, we did True Lies on the show the other day, and there's actually a shot in True Lies that's like in the release. Like, I rented it on Amazon. And it's an extra shot of him on the horse that's just not him. It's like, it's not even like a spliced frame. It's like an actual full, like, second. You see, you're like, that's not Schwarzenegger.
Well, you know why? Because back then they didn't realize that people would be able to stop and look at the yeah. frame. They were just like, it was film.
We couldn't believe it. We were like, this is one of the highest grossing movies of the 90s. It's one of his, like, tentpole movies. And my thesis on that was actually that that's the biggest missed sequel opportunity of all time in Schwarzenegger's career. Because it is. It's crazy, right? That they never made a second one.
Yeah, well, he just became governor.
Yeah. Well, it was in development, but they nixed it because terrorism stopped being funny is the reason. And so Cameron was like, I'm not going to do it.
Jamie Lee Curtis, one of the greatest scenes of all time in that movie.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Just took that movie to a whole different level with that
performance. Oh, yeah. And I got to say, the Paxton stole the show. Paxton, I didn't even remember him hardly being in the movie. And he's just the most, like shitweasel entertaining. He's so good in that role.
He is so good.
Yeah.
And I just did a movie series with Bill Paxton.
You worked with Paxton?
I was with him about 4 or 5 months in Mexico.
What?
Did a movie called Texas Rising.
Cool. Yeah. Wow. Paxton. Yeah. Oh, that's unbelievable. He's an awesome dude.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
Great. True artist, like he really, really cares about his work.
Incredible filmography too. I mean, all kinds of stuff
from Weird Science on.
Yeah, I mean, Aliens, Tombstone, all these movies.
And Apollo 13.
Yeah,
really, he got on there and he hasn't got off. Now he's doing a television series.
Right, he's in Training Day, right?
Yeah,
he's the Denzel character.
Yeah,
that's good. That's gonna be fun to watch.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Yeah, cool. So all right, so you got comics growing up. Your dad was a cop. And so when you found out about Jonah Hex, you had to have been kind of a little bit like, wow, this is, I'm going to get to play Jonah Hex. I grew up reading this comic book.
I know. I was kind of like, is this real? Like, what am I getting into?
Yeah.
And in the sheet, it said like a heavily reoccurring or potential for regular. But it was just a guest star. And I just went out there and said, you know what? I'm not playing this as a guest star. I want to take this character over because this is a once in a lifetime chance.
Some good makeup too.
Yeah, they did a great, and everyone was so on board. Like they had everything ready for me and the costume and like they took it to a whole different level. I was so happy.
You did like a Bale Batman thing a little bit. You talk like this.
Yeah, I put everything in the back of my voice.
Does it hurt to talk like that for you when you're on set?
You know, around 4 a.m. in the morning, it starts to loosen. And right here, I start to lose my voice.
Yeah, right.
And then I have a really hard time everyone hearing me.
Yeah.
Dominic Purcell was like, you know, what is this Marlon Brando thing you're doing? I can't hear you whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I can't talk. It's like I've been doing this for 12, you know, 14 hours right now.
So you're coming back in season 2, episode 6, right? That's what I hear. It was announced. It was a spoiler thing.
Yeah, the second season I came back, episode 6.
Yeah.
And then they did the crossover,
right?
And I don't know anything else.
Okay,
people hint and all this stuff, and I'm like,
sure,
you know,
you read the spoilers and everything.
The news. Everyone wants Jonah Hex to spin off into his own series, and I can't see a better sway into like a cable series or something like that.
Right. Well, I mean, that's kind of the beauty of Legends, right? Is that they get to combine so many cool characters, and there's a lot of space. There's a lot of open space. It's not really like the other shows where you sort of have to watch every episode and then see what happens. You can just watch the Jonah Hex episodes and you're good. They stand on their own.
They do. They stand on their own. I actually think I went in there to give everyone a little bit of relief.
Yeah.
because they were having they work so many hours on those shows, especially up in Canada. You take them a little further.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you like just comic book stuff in general? You watch all the Suicide Squads and everything? You watch all of them?
Well, I haven't seen Suicide Squad, and that's because I have a little 3-year-old.
So oh.
I wind up watching Sing and Trolls and stuff like that.
Sing was good.
Yeah, Sing was good. Really good.
Did you like Zootopia? You probably watched that too, right?
Yeah, 20 million times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it going to win awards, that movie?
Is it really?
People like it. Yeah, Kubo and that are like the two, those are like the two big front runner animated ones this year. Everybody loves. Have you seen any of the other Oscar stuff? Seen La La Land yet?
I haven't, and my buddy Tom Everett Scott's in that.
Yeah.
Which I saw that he was tweeting all this stuff of Ryan Gosling, and I was like, I didn't know what he was doing. And then it was our 20th anniversary for the film called That Thing You Do.
Yeah.
And the director loves That Thing You Do, and they did articles on his love of That Thing You Do.
Chazelle, yeah, well, because he's a huge music guy. That's
music
his
guy, yeah.
Yeah, I interviewed him a little just recently, and I got to talk to him a little bit about it. And he, I was like, when you pick a project, do you think about rhythm? Like, because your two movies both are so intensely based on rhythm, everything about your movies, Whiplash. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. I'm a former musician. That's the way I think in music.
Was he a drummer?
Yeah, he was.
Well, then he's not a musician. That's what they always told me when I did it. Yeah. Was in the band. The drummer's not really a musician.
Well, so yeah, you just made the reference to going back to 96. Tom Hanks, and that's just one on the crazy long list of insane people you've worked with. And insane in the talent and amazing level, not actually crazy. So I watched a little interview you did reflecting on That Thing You Do a little bit. And that movie was... Though nowadays I think it's remembered for the song more than anything. I feel like that's the reason.
It's like a quotable movie.
Yeah.
Like it sticks. It's a feel-good movie. People really love the era.
Yeah.
And the music stood out. Michael Schlesinger wrote that song. But, you know, I remember being at the table and them playing two different That Thing You Do songs.
Yeah.
And saying, what do you guys like? we're like, they're both great.
Yeah. Wow, and so there was two options.
So if you watch the end of the movie, the second one plays at the end of the movie.
Cool.
And it's like, you could say, it's like, oh my God, that's That Thing You Do.
Yeah.
But it's not the one that they had to play. And another thing is they played a little bit of it in the beginning, and
yeah.
then they kept increasing it and adding different things to it. So when you watch that movie, it's a master of having one thing being that thing you do is
yeah.
the movie, and then kind of layering it out. So that you don't really hear the final production till the end.
It's a cult classic. People adore that movie.
Yeah, people really do.
And the cast is crazy, man.
I know.
I mean, it's you... So, but a lot of those people you were working with at the time, they weren't who they were yet, right? I mean, everybody from Steve Zahn to... I mean, Hanks really was.
Hank just won 2 Academy
yeah,
Awards
he
in
was
a row.
The guy.
Yeah, he was the guy. Yeah, he was the guy. Yeah.
But everybody else, I mean, for the most part, that cast was like pretty young, kind of up and coming.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And that's
Charlize
one of those,
Theron,
yeah, right.
Giovanni Ribisi, Liv Tyler,
yeah, that's fun, man. So, do you stay in touch with any of these?
Colin Hanks was in it, for
yeah.
his first ever yep. talking thing.
He's a drummer, is that right? Is that
no? He walks Liv Tyler down in the showcase and says a couple things. I mean,
yeah.
Colin freaking Hanks, man.
Yeah,
yeah. I always tell him like, you owe me something, buddy.
Yeah.
I don't know what you owe me.
yeah.
So, awesome.
It's going back to 96, I mean, I was like writing down some of the names where I was like, oh, I got to ask him about this guy or this guy. You know, you got Nick Cage, you got Ed Harris, John Cusack, John Voight, Bruce Willis, Tom Hanks. And that was just a few. It was like, there's a bunch of guys that I loved in movies growing up. You could write a book. You could host a talk show. I mean, there's so many things. You have to have the most stories of anyone.
I got so many stories.
Yeah.
I'm going to write that book.
You should write that book, right? You got the idea right here. So let's just get back to Arsenal for a second. We mentioned Cage, and he's obviously like the big, crazy. He is crazy in the movie. What was it like working with him, sharing scenes with Nick Cage? I mean, he was one of my favorite guys ever growing up.
Well, yeah. I mean, I love him. And Leaving Las Vegas, such a great role for him.
Yeah.
You know, played with... that indie vibe and really get into it, so it's not cartoony in any way.
No.
And it's just gritty, and he gets to be that character, and he really embodies whatever he plays.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I think he's got caught up in the fact that he was doing Con Air, but he was still Leaving Las Vegas guy, you know?
Well, that's the funniest thing. He's the single most bizarre guy in the sense that, because you don't choose as an actor when your movies come out, obviously. You film them, they go in the can, the studio releases them when they want to. So he does Leaving Las Vegas, which is supposed to be essentially like an indie movie that who knows who was going to see.
Right.
But at the same time, he's like his rising star. So he films Con Air, The Rock, and Face Off, which proceed to be the next three movies that come out after he wins the Oscar for Leaving Las Vegas. That's insane.
It's such good timing.
Yeah, like, right?
It's a good team, man.
Yeah.
Like, they figured it out. They put all those big action things, but he still kept his credibility.
Right.
As the actor.
And it was all so quick, too, that it was like, even though those were like big, you know, popcorn Hollywood movies, it all happened in 2 years, so it wasn't nobody was like, oh, he's not great anymore. It was like, well, he's just doing this thing right now, but, you know, he'll come back and, you know, get adaptation or...
Adaptation.
Unbelievable.
God, he's brilliant in adaptation. I mean, I love Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. He's great, and he's great in Arsenal. He's kind of ridiculously great in Arsenal.
Yeah, he's big. He plays a super great, like, super coked out kind of gangster character.
Yeah.
So, I mean, tell me a story. What was it like? You had some great scenes with him. Where he's going big, man.
I was sitting in a chair waiting. One thing, Stephen Miller is the director. Everything is contained so that we take care of business very quickly.
Yeah.
And when he came, I hadn't met him before we started filming.
Nick.
And he literally walked in the door. And I was just kind of thinking about the scene and going over my beats and what I needed to do. And he walked in the door with this outfit that I hadn't seen. And he walked over and he said, hey, Jonathan, let's do this. And he shook my hand. And then for the next 16 hours, we filmed.
Wow.
And he just would do anything in the moment that he felt he needed to do. And, you know, I've been in so many different acting studios across this world. And the one thing is he takes so much risk. And he could with this character.
Yeah.
But there was something else going on with Nicolas. I think that he was passionate about playing this eccentricity. He was into it.
Yeah.
And there's a movie that he had done like 20 years ago with Chris Coppola called Deadfall.
Okay, yeah.
And if there's some correlation between the two of them, because I talked to Chris Coppola and he said, yeah, we're kind of like playing around with this idea because we were brothers in this movie, and then the movie didn't, you know, but we still get to play these characters and be in the same film together. So they had this thing going on inside of this movie, Arsenal.
Interesting.
And then Steven just locked the doors and just let us play.
Yeah.
You know, we long hours, ridiculously long hours. I don't think it was 16 hours. It was close to 16 hours.
Wow.
And at the very end of it, we were doing a scene where he's confronting me, standing at the table, and there's all these stunt guys everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're like the henchmen that are going to take me out.
Yeah.
And Cage grabs a glass off of the thing, and he looks at me, and he just throws it. And in the back of my head, I go, man, like, you could really hurt someone with that. And the other time, I'm like, looking at him, like, are you going to come across this table? Because if you do, dude,
yeah,
I'm going to just take care of you.
Nick Cage threw a glass at you.
He didn't throw it at me. He threw it with
near intention. You.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a great moment in the film.
Yeah.
And you know what? He knew that. He knew that that was...
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
He wanted
it was part of this whole... Like, when he threw a punch, he wouldn't throw it like this. Watch his
hand. Oh, yeah. There's that scene where he's coming down on the guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Had you seen... When was like, so when did you get to see the movie, the whole movie, the first time?
It was like 2 weeks ago or three weeks ago, and I got the screener that was sent from Lionsgate.
Yeah.
I was just like, wow.
Yeah, it looks really good. It looks great.
Steven just puts these films together. Marauders.
Yeah.
The execution of Marauders was so precise. We had Maloney on the lead. He's just a great actor, man. He could do anything at any moment.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they used to talk to me about Tom Hanks, about his acting. They would always say, like, Tak Fujimoto, the DP, would say, you could put this in any gear at any time.
Yeah.
You could, and that's what Tom Hanks does. He can go put it right back in reverse.
Right.
And he could just put it in neutral.
It's one of the best ever.
You know, you could just floor it.
Yeah.
Go straight forward. So that's, when you get actors like that that can do that kind of dance.
Yeah.
Man, you just don't know what you're going to get.
How was it working with Adrian Grenier again?
Me and Adrian had a great time working on Marauders. We got a lot of scenes together, and we just freaking hit it off. We're like completely different and but the in this but the same kind of heart underneath it all. So we were like, so they would talk about it, like, you guys should be brothers. You look like brothers. You act like brothers,
right?
And then so they got this film going, and we shot this in like, I don't want to say 2 weeks, because it might have been 2 weeks, maybe a couple of days more. A hurricane. Like a hurricane or tornado screwed up the days a little bit.
Okay, sure. Yeah, yeah. So you're working. You got a couple other things coming out as well. So you got Arsenal that comes out today, tomorrow, yesterday, whatever the day people are watching this. Jackals with Stephen Dorff. That's, you've already wrapped on that. Is that right?
Yeah, we wrapped that. We even did reshoots on that. So
okay,
that's
cool.
In the horror genre.
Right. We just did on Action Movie Night. We did Blade yesterday, and you know, I was 10 years old when that movie came out. In 1998, and Stephen Dorff, I remember seeing like on the cover of magazines, and he was such a pretty boy at that moment. The vampire thing, it's always been trendy, I guess, but it was super trendy then too. And it was crazy. I was like, man, Stephen Dorff. I was like, I looked him up. I was like, oh yeah, I saw him in that. I was happy to see him working with you. He's great in Blade. I mean, it was fun working with him.
Oh, Stephen Dorff is great. Yeah. I've known Stephen over 20 years.
Yeah.
We've never done anything together. So this is our first time we really got to work together. We didn't really get to do a lot of... Like, when I work with somebody, you know, usually I get to know them and work the characters through and everything. Jackals was a very short period of time. Shot. Steven comes in for a period.
Right.
You know, me and Stephen Dorff were on the front cover of the very first Vanity Fair Actors to Watch.
Oh, okay.
Leading Men to Watch.
But that there was a ton of guys on that cover with you.
Leonardo
DiCaprio was on that same. I saw that image, actually. I was just looking that up.
Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah.
It was a great group. Matthew McConaughey.
McConaughey.
Yeah, and then me.
Yeah. No. Yeah, but like, what's crazy is if you look at your credits and you look at everything you've done, it's like, you know, they always say it's the people out here that stay here that make it, right? If you come out here and you're like, let's say you have a great moment, some down moments, some up moments, but you leave, well, yeah, obviously it's over. You leave the city, you decided to give it up. As long as you stay here, it's like it just rolls and it keeps going and it keeps going. Because so many of the guys you're talking about have had ups and downs.
Yeah, everyone has like a wheel. You go to the top of it and then you start to circle down. It just depends how far it takes you to get back
to the top. Yeah. Right, because there's all the, you know, there's the guys like we talked about Tom Cruise for the cameras were rolling, who are like the sort of like singular, the 5 or 10 of them that like exist. Denzel, these guys who are like global icons that their brand can never actually fade away. But that's like, I don't know, there's the couple, there's very few. Most very actors few. And actresses out here are not that way. So what's wild about that is like, I was thinking, okay, Nick Cage is a great example because I'm going to launch this show pretty soon. I was talking a little bit about this Tom Cruise related show, and I was like, you know, I love Nick Cage, I love Tom Cruise. It's two of my favorite guys ever. But I was like, Cage is not as relevant right now. He is to me because he's one of my favorites ever, and he's obviously in big movies still, but he's a little different. He's not in the Mission Impossible franchise. He's not still sort of producing his own stuff that's opening for $400 million. Like, Cruise is one of those guys that's managed to stay doing it. And if you think about it, like Jonah Hex, you're relevant in a way right now because of that character that over, you know, 95% of males in your industry, because everybody watches that show. Everybody loves comic books. That's the thing right now. You're Jonah Hex.
Man, I wish you could tell my agents. No.
Yeah.
They all know. It's all good.
Yeah, that thing, I think just that to me is crazy. Is like, that's what it takes. You're the lead in that thing you do. You're Jonah Hex. 20 years, but relevant to a different audience, completely different ways. It's the same thing.
Yeah, you know, something's happened with my career in this whole... ever since my son was in the belly,
yeah,
I've started working at a different level again. I started opposite Duchovny and Ed Harris in the submarine movie.
Yeah.
And working with Ed Harris every single day, you just learn. Just learned more about being a man.
Yeah.
You know, a man as an actor.
Sure.
And then Texas Rising, worked with Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
The great group of actors that was in that film, watching those guys day in and day out.
Right.
I'm being put in this, like, male, testosterone-driven world for some reason. Like,
yeah.
You know, I've worked with Rennie Harlan twice during the course of this time.
You're a big action movie guy. That had to be cool.
Oh, man. He's the best. I mean, he's... The movies I did were one called 5 Days of War,
yeah,
which is about basically like what happened in the Ukraine happened in a country called Georgia.
Yeah.
And he tells those 5 Days of War that about a 5 Day war that happened. And I was like the action hero star.
Yeah.
And we had to like, we would get to the point where I was like, do you want this to be an Arnold line? And I'm like, because this is going to be an Arnold line.
Yeah.
And this movie's not really an Arnold movie.
Sure.
You know, but I did just kill 25 guys, so I could say it very well, no problem.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we worked it so that he would have a choice when he cut it together, whether it would be like the, you know, standard line in an action movie or, you know, just make it more real.
You mentioned Arnold lines. This is a funny one. We talk about this a lot on the show, and it's, you know, he in the late 80s and early 90s, Schwarzenegger had this great thing happen. His accent got better and better as he went, but in the mid 80s, he had this awesome thing where he would say these lines with such confidence and such conviction because he was Schwarzenegger, 7-time Mr. Olympia. Like,
yeah.
In his mind, he was a golden god. He could say anything. He could do anything. But some of the stuff that he says, you're like, it's kind of hard to understand what he says, and when you watch it now, it makes it even better. Like, everybody always in Predator, for instance, they always remember, you know, like stick around and lines like that. But, like, I just love at the beginning when the guy's like, a Russian cabinet minister went over the border 2 days ago. And Schwarzenegger looks at him and he's like, this cabinet minister, was he traveling on the wrong side of the border? And you're like, what did you say? You're like, what was that? But he's, like, grinning and he's got a cigar in his mouth. It's the best, man. I miss that era of movies. That's, like, my favorite stuff.
I agree.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, John Wick and movies like Taken, they kind of have managed to legitimize it again, but it's just different. You know, you want a little more, the stakes have to be a little more real, I think, nowadays than they were back then when, you know, it was all Stallone and Schwarzenegger and everything.
Yeah, but you know why?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's why comic book, I think the comic book world is successful because they actually have a little bit of that space to play around with because they're superheroes.
Yeah.
You know, even though they make them really incredibly real like Batman.
Yeah.
Now, they still are superheroes. They dress in costumes.
So let me ask you, just as a guy who's now working in the superhero genre, I saw this episode of Celebrity Sweat you did where you're doing like your workout and you're shredded. I mean, obviously you're in great shape. Is that within the thing your whole career or is that a later development where you just decided you were just going to like take your body crazy seriously?
That's exactly what I did. It was talking about Tom Cruise. Okay, so I was gonna have a child.
Yeah.
First time in my life, my wife was pregnant, and I was doing Ray Donovan
with Nev
and John Voight.
Both great actors.
Yeah, fantastic. And the reason why I bring up Tom Cruise is because when I auditioned for Don Papsadera, and they brought me in with all the freaking people and the director, and my take when I first went in there was totally Brad Pitt.
Okay.
Like very serious about giving the charity and heartfelt and like Legends of the Fallish. And,
yeah, right.
And the director looks at me and just goes, could you do it like Tom Cruise? And I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then we started the film and it was like the third episode, and the producer said to me, he goes, Jonathan, could you get more fit? You're like, you're a movie star in this.
So, yeah.
And I was like, what? He's like calling me out like a girl?
Yeah.
He's like saying I'm fat?
Sure.
It's ridiculous. But what I didn't realize, well, what he was saying is movie stars, guys like Tom Cruise,
yeah,
they take themselves every step of the way very, very serious. And yeah. I wasn't. I was drinking beer and spending too much time having a good time instead of really kind of focusing on what I needed to produce,
yeah,
like to get out of myself. And that was the most of me.
Right.
And when I really looked back when I was successful, I didn't need to be a big guy in That Thing You Do.
Right.
But American Quilt put me on the charts. When I came out of that pool and Janusz Kaminski lit me,
yeah,
I became a commodity.
Yeah, you were shredded.
I was just a big boy. I really had
had
it together in some strange way. So I knew my physical relevance was very important for the next stage of my life. Not only for the movies and the roles that I would play. Look, I got Jonah Hex.
Yeah, right.
I got Arsenal. Like they put me in these movies because they look at me and they're like,
yeah, you're like a tough guy. Yeah, how do you do that? You got the stubble. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just followed my father's lead in that and that. That's what I know. I grew up being a cop's son.
Yeah.
And I watched how my father kind of dealt with life. And
right.
I'm really good at that. So all these roles came to me because I put physical relevance and I put time in the gym. And Mark Wahlberg, I'll never forget. I was at I walked by Gold's Gym.
Yeah.
And he was out there on the porch, like sitting there with his homies. He's like, "Hey, what's up, Jonathan?" And I remember thinking to myself, "Do you always spend time at the gym?"
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm going to my acting class. Do you do that? It's in my head.
Yeah.
And then I just realized that's part of him. That's not entirely who he is.
Right.
You know, he's got so many other aspects, but he knew that because he was a performer.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a decision then later, the latter half of your career, to decide to get just super, super yoked.
Super yoked.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's hard to do. I gotta say, I've done it before. I've never gotten like you're pretty big. I've never gotten big, but you know, I've done it. It's hard work. It really does take commitment.
It's diet.
Yeah,
a lot of diet. For Arsenal, I was on a 4,000 calorie diet. I ate 8 meals a day.
Wow,
it was stupid. I was just shoveling food in my mouth.
Yeah,
just working out.
Like, but the right kind of food, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the right kind of food.
You don't want to get.
Yeah, just not like calorie, just not calorie intake, but like proteins and.
So let me ask you, like, so you mentioned like back then you were hanging out, you were drinking beer. What's like the relationship to drinking beer, alcohol, as you start to get into working earlier mornings, working out more? Is it easier, harder? Do you find you even have time to drink? I'm asked this because I talked to a lot of actors and people in the industry. It seems like as people get the second half, drinking becomes something that's just like, I don't have time for this.
That's exactly right. I don't have time for it. Yeah, when I broke it down, I was like, all these different things. I had reasons because I didn't want to wake up with my son screaming and I have a hangover.
Right.
I had to get up for my workout and I needed to work out to look to grow.
Yeah.
And every time you do something that takes away from that growth, you're not going to get to that place.
Sure.
So I had all these reasons, all these things. I was like, you know, did alcohol ruin my life in one way or the other? Yeah, it probably did. Drugs and alcohol has been prominent in Hollywood. I tried to tell my father this one day. I was like, look, you go to a party in Los Angeles and you're single.
Yeah.
There's going to be drugs around. There's going to be a lot of alcohol and a lot of women.
Yep.
And you're going to have to really go through those waters. Yeah. I went down that road. Same road Nicolas Cage probably went down.
Yeah.
And so I made a choice. I told myself that I'm going to be there for my son no matter what.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the most that I can be.
Yeah.
And I don't have time. And then my father-in-law told me, he said his father stopped drinking. And he just said it's not worth the headache.
Oh, so are you fully sober? You don't drink at all?
I'm not sober.
Okay.
I've been sober. I'm not sober anymore. I just don't drink.
Got it. Cool. Interesting. That's, yeah. It seems
I'm lucky. Because, I'm lucky that I can do that.
Because I was just going to say, yeah, that's not everybody.
No.
That's hard, you know? Interesting. Cool. That's cool. So you also have two directing credits, a bunch of writing credits. You were a writer on Roadhouse too. You never got to meet Swayze, did you?
No, he studied with Roy London.
Okay.
But I never got to meet Swayze, and I love Swayze.
The Swayze is my single actual favorite of all time. I said that about Tom Cruise. Cruise, because he's so relevant now, it's Swayze's body works so small. It's hard for me to get to, you know, we talk about Cruise on the show all the time. Swayze's limited, but he still is my single favorite ever because I think that Bodhi is like one of the cornerstone movie roles that I'll ever watch. He's magnetic in that movie. It's legitimately magnetic in
Point Break. Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Movie's underrated. I feel like people don't appreciate that movie.
You know, I think, I hate to say it, but I think it's Keanu. During that time, you could never take Keanu serious, and he was trying so hard for everyone to take him serious.
Yeah, right.
You know, he played the Buddha and everything. It was like
Little Buddha.
He was trying so hard to make everyone take him serious when he was Bill and Ted.
There's a great part in that movie in Point Break when he's like leaving a message for Lori Petty, and he's like lying there, and he's like, Tyler, I lied to you because I thought you'd leave. Good guess, huh? Fuck, why am I so bad at this? And it's like my favorite thing ever. He was great. That's another guy I haven't got to interview, and I'll probably lose it when I interview him. I'm such a big fan.
Yeah, he's great.
Years.
I went to San Francisco to see Sean Penn in a play.
Yeah.
Sean had directed me in a piece that he wanted to make that never got made.
Yeah.
But I got all the knowledge of hanging around Sean and going to the sets and him talking. But when I went to go see him in this play, we went to dinner afterwards.
Yeah.
And it was Philip Seymour Hoffman, Keanu Reeves. Who else was there? Aaron Eckhart, Sean, Robin, that group.
Wow.
I was like, okay. Wow, am I in this company?
Cool, man.
Am I supposed to be here?
So let me ask you, because you mentioned working with, well, Cage is a good example, Ed Harris. These are guys who notoriously are pretty intense on set, just intense guys. Who's the most intense actor you've ever worked with? Level of intensity where you're like, whoa, you're like smoldering right now.
Well, I mean, the focus, Tom Hanks, intensity, Ed Harris.
Really?
Yeah, he's legitimately kill everybody in the room.
Nails.
Yeah, like he is. There's something like when I hung out with my buddies that are SEALs.
Yeah,
they would say like, you know, I could kill everybody in this room. You know, right. Stuff like right. that. You're like, oh, what, are you serious? And you're like, yeah, he's serious. That's what they do for a living. You know, hang around the fighters. You know, guys that practice killing people. The whole day.
Yeah.
And some construction worker wants to pick a fight with them in a bar, and they're like, what do you do all day?
You're going
to
tell me Ed Harris practices killing people all day?
No, but he has that essence.
Yeah.
He has that, and he's one of the nicest men I've ever met before in my life.
Ah,
and the amazing. Way that we ran lines, he gave me a baseball glove.
Yeah.
And he took a glove and we played catch and ran our lines.
Wow.
That's how I rehearsed with Ed Harris.
I have this list of 10 interviews all time that I want to get, right? As a journalist, it's kind of like, you know, you can tell I'm a big fucking nerd. I nerd out about what I nerd out about. So the things, the people I love are the ones that I want to interview. And he's like probably in this like number 13 or 14, almost based solely on General Hummel from The Rock. But I mean, I've seen him in so many things. And I always hope that with the people that make that 10 and 20, like that I have enough knowledge. I've watched enough. I know enough things that when I interview them, I don't come off as like, the base level fan, but I come off as like, I intimately know your work, and you, even if you're, because I've heard Ed's a pretty intense guy. I've heard he can be like a little short if he's not in a good mood. So I never want to be that guy that gets that side of one of these people who I admire. You know, I want to make sure they kind of take me seriously. And
if you give respect, respect will be given.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much everyone except maybe a couple of the guys are off the charts, which there's many of them.
Yeah.
In the acting profession, there's a lot of really crazy people.
Yeah.
I actually worked with a legitimately crazy person.
Who? Well, you can't say.
No, I can say. I think she actually is in an insane asylum. Emily Lloyd.
Okay.
Remember that name?
I don't know.
River runs through it.
Okay, sure. Right.
She was legitimately, like, we were driving the set one day, and she was like, stop the car, stop the car. And she ran out in front of the headlights and just laid there. And I was like trying to get the driver. I was like, you know, there could be a car coming at any moment. Like, we got to get her out of the road.
Yeah.
And then she would do things. She would sleep outside my door. She was just out. And then she got locked up in the insane asylum. But she's brilliant in the movie.
Yeah, I guess.
They cut her out. Like, it was just something about just.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You hear that. So you're married now, third wife, and you have a kid, right?
Yeah, a 3-year-old boy.
That's cool. That's a whole different phase of life.
Yeah, and that phase of life has brought me to this, you know, starring in this movie Arsenal.
Yeah.
About 4 films in, producing guys that did Lone Survivor.
Yeah.
I had worked with them in the very beginning of my career in like 97, 98.
Yeah.
I did a couple of their very first movies. And I saw them out after Ray Donovan. They were like, we're doing these movies. We'd love for you to be in them.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you know, and then they would send me scripts, and I would be like, oh my God,
yeah,
I want to play that. And then they were like, well, you can't play that. Jason Patrick's playing that.
Yeah, right.
Like, what? But we'll give you a scene in the movie with Jason.
Yeah.
I'm like, I love Jason Patrick.
That's cool. Yeah.
He's like my favorite. I learned so much about Jason Patrick working with him, but he's such a great guy and one of my favorite actors.
Yeah.
So I did a scene or a couple of scenes in that movie, and then the next one they sent to me, I was like, I get to act with Bruce Willis in this movie. Like, I'm going to be his right hand man in this movie.
Yeah.
And so, just had a great time working with Bruce, and getting the experience of a true movie star. Like, he is just.
I've heard good stories about him.
He can do all the work and do all the great stuff, but he is just. He's Bruce Willis.
You know what movie recently that I've seen that he is unbelievable in is Looper. He's so good.
I know.
In that
movie. See. You know, Tom Hanks told me, he said, that's one movie I wish I would have done.
Looper?
Yeah. So he must have got offered it at some point, and then couldn't do it or something.
He has that great scene with Joseph Gordon-Levitt where he's listening to him talk, and he's like, she's going to fix you up. She's going to straighten you up. And he's talking about all the mistakes. He's just visualizing all the mistakes that he made and how stupid this kid is. It's great, that movie. And that movie was made for like $30 million, and it looks as good as like... Looks as good as like everything. That's, we always talk about that on the show. We always use Looper as the example because it's like, how do you make a movie that looks that good for that little money? And then you see a studio spend $300 million on a movie, and you're like, this doesn't really make me feel any different than Looper did, you know?
Yeah, I
burn money.
Yeah, they burn money.
Yeah,
it's like the government.
That's crazy.
And so the third one that I did was Marauders.
Okay, yeah,
and that's when I work with Stephen Miller and our DP Brandon Cox and a lot of the other people. And I was so in need to take all this knowledge that I had from acting for all these years with these great people and to bring it. No matter what anyone wanted me to do, I was going to perform at this level.
Yeah.
No one was seeing me at this level, and Lord knows no casting director is ever going to watch Marauders to see my great acting. But you know what? There's so many moments in that movie, and it's because of my director and my DP and my first AD and everyone protecting me and making me look really good, as well as my fellow actors, Adrian and Alicia. All of them just really made sure that I was taken care of.
Dude, you're seeing with Adrian where he pulls a gun on you. Great. You're great at
it. I was on fire.
Yeah.
My will was so connected to the material
that
I was not going to let that go. And I don't know how to describe it. Those lines, those words, it was like healing a part of my life that I needed to let go and put behind me.
Yeah.
And there was nothing going to stand in my way. Nothing. Not a mistake, you know, some in my eye line. Nothing.
Yeah.
This happened so many times that it's kind of haunted me throughout my career. I feel like it's, and nothing was going to get in my way. And that was my will.
Yeah. You did like an AMA thing kind of recently, right? Like a Reddit Ask Me Anything. Yeah. And you told some stories. So there's some funny stories about you going to red carpets with Ellen DeGeneres in the 90s. Which was, I was like reading this and I was like, and you were just asked to do this by your manager? That's what it says?
Yeah, I was good friends with Ellen.
Yeah.
We went to everywhere together. It was like we're buddies.
Yeah.
And we would go to this place called Esalen.
Yeah.
I was studying hypnosis and meditation and all these things, and she would go up there too. And she wasn't Ellen like we know her today, so she wasn't super famous.
Yeah.
She was famous, and she could make people laugh like nobody's business up on stage, stand-up comedian. And I went to all her shows, and then one day, she got this Ellen show, and it just came to a point where she was scared to death about being... Hey.
Right.
And so her and her manager must have talked, and they asked me.
Yeah.
Like, would you walk the red carpet with Ellen? She feels comfortable with you, and she needs to kind of hide what she... And I was like, man, that's just... absolutely.
Well, because...
One aunt passed, and I think it's because she wasn't allowed to be with her girlfriend her wife at the time, no marriage, but they weren't allowed in the hospital, and I think that's what happened with my aunt Pat, and then another aunt, and then I had an uncle who was gay, and I had like three funcles, as they call them.
Yeah.
So I grew up in that world, and I kind of understood it because they would never talk about it, and when Ellen asked,
you were like, I'm there. I got you.
I got you. No problem.
I recently got to go to her show. My brother and his now wife, my sister-in-law, just got married last August. And Sarah, my sister, is the biggest Ellen fan I've ever met. I mean, and they live in Seattle, where I'm from. So this business and the kind of stories you're telling, which are, you know, I've lived 1% of your stories. But I kind of know the vibe, right? You're at a party and this person, that person's there. You're at a dinner, right? Like, the more years you're here, the more you just get to kind of be around it. So for their wedding, they ask, can you get us tickets to Ellen? It's really hard to get Ellen tickets. It's like impossibly hard to get Ellen tickets. So my girlfriend and I spent a long time trying to get them tickets. We got tickets to the show. They flew down here for it, went to the show. And we actually got invited back for 12 days. We all won 12 days tickets, which was really cool. So they got to come down twice. But I hadn't been to the show yet. And I have to say, in person, she very well might be the best at this I've ever seen hosting. I mean, Fallon's really good, and you have some of the older hosts, but, I mean, she is just unbelievable. Like, I was in awe. Like, my jaw was dropping watching her talk to people. It was just effortless. You know what I mean? It was funny. Her timing was perfect. It seemed so real and honest. People seemed so comfortable with her. I don't know. Couldn't believe it. Was she kind of always like that to hang out with? Just like, just really graceful?
Yeah, she was. She was amazing to be around. But that one thing she was scared of, and that, you know, that was the one thing that kept her from propelling to be having her own talk show.
Yeah.
And then she had her coming out episode, and it just, it made her be free. And
yeah,
it's not right to judge people for that.
Yeah.
For anything that you may perceive as being wrong.
Of course.
Who they are.
I think she could legitimately run for president and win. I honestly think she could. I think she's that well loved. Do you guys stay in touch? Are you still friends?
I haven't seen her for a long time.
Yeah.
Last time my buddies from Rascal Flatts were on the show, and I went there and kind of surprised her, and she was really happy to see me.
That's cool.
But we're not, you know, we were like, you know, we're buddies.
Yeah. Back then. Cool.
I didn't know anybody else.
Yeah. It was like, yeah, it was earlier in the Hollywood days. That's cool.
I think it was even, I don't know, I had done that thing you do. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So, I think that kind of wraps us up on time. I still want to ask you all these questions, but we'll have to save it for round two, maybe.
Yeah, we went many different places, many things to talk about.
Yeah, man.
I'm a guy with 25 years in the business.
I appreciate you answering so many things. So honestly, this was great. I kept marking things down. I have this whole second page of just notes where I was like, oh, I want to ask about that. Or like, oh, that's great. But, you know, there's always time for others. So
yeah, you could have a whole horror section on me and a whole action section.
Yeah, right. You got to come on as a guest. And on
like
AMA.
A legitimate acting section.
Yeah, I was going to try to bring you on to do like Marauders on AMA, but you should just come on as just like a guest to talk about one of the movies we love. There's still like a good 25 like seminal action movies that we haven't covered yet.
Have you done Cliffhanger?
We have. We did. Yeah, we did.
My Rennie Harlan.
Yeah, that's good.
I love Rennie.
Dude, I mean, with talking about action movies the way you were talking about them, I feel like I would throw five at you. You'd be like, oh, yeah, I'd do that in a heartbeat. Like, because it sounds like you love that genre as much as I do.
I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, you should come on. It'd be fun. Well, tell some stupid jokes. Do some Schwarzenegger impressions, you know?
Okay. Sounds great.
Yeah. So, guys, thanks for watching. Check out Arsenal today in theaters, in 10 theaters, and, of course, on VOD. You can find it. You're excellent in the movie. Cage is excellent in the movie. Cusack's a lot of fun to watch.
He's playing Steve as a guy, I think. What do you think?
Cusack?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in an action movie. Yeah. He's doing something.
He's a little stoic, yeah. I interviewed him last year, actually. You did? For something, and I asked him some questions, and it was a junket, and he was good with like some of the answers, but I don't know what was going on. He just didn't want to answer one of my questions. So much so that we actually cut it from the interview. I remember what it was. I said to him, like, oh, you're in this movie, you're surrounded by, you know, Oscar winner. I was like, oh, it was Chirac. It was a Spike Lee movie. That's what it was. I was like, you know, Oscar nominated director, Oscar winning director now, you know, and it had this crazy cast, right? It's like, take yourself back to Con Air, which is another movie where you're surrounded by Cage, you know, Malkovich, Buscemi, all these people that have been nominated for Oscars. Tell me what the difference in those environments are like. And I think he just looked at me and he was like, it's a different animal.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. I was like, I guess we don't want to talk about it. So,
and, you know, and when you watch Arsenal, you'll see he is focused on telling the story.
Yeah, totally.
And kind of he's helping Steven get the story across. We were propelled to make this story in a very short period of time. We were making problem solving all the way through.
Yeah.
Steven guiding the way. But guys like Cusack, who've been there so many times, helped him. And Cage helped him a great deal. Me and Adrian just... God, it was so exhausting. We just kept going.
Yeah, it's intense. It's very intense. So check that movie out, guys. A lot of fun to watch. And if you want to follow either one of us, you can tweet at us. You're great on Twitter. You're like so good. You follow people back. You respond to things.
I try, man.
Yeah, you're one of the rare famous people who's just like that. You're just like, yeah, you're a fan. I'll talk to you. That's cool. That's really cool.
Hey, man, you know, Twitter got someone to be president of the United States, so I believe in Twitter.
So announce to you, John Sheck is running for president. No?
I need a lot more followers. Yeah.
Oh, God. Where can the folks find you on Twitter if they want to follow along?
At John Sheck, JohnScheech.
Cool.
Not Jonathan, but John Sheck.
Just John Sheck.
At John Sheck.
And if you guys want to follow me, you can follow me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. And thanks, man. This was really fun. Appreciate you coming by.
There's a lot of Ben Batemans on Twitter.
There are. But yeah. Ben Bateman Media is me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the only one that wears a R2-D2 C-3PO pocket square.
Yeah, so. Baby. I can't wait to watch all that with my son.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Bye, guys.
All right. He will sit there and eat an entire thing of popcorn.
producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.